WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Transgender Dysphoria Blues by Against Me from 2014, playing us in for the final part of our six-part World Pride Month series here on The Brian Lehrer Show, Prejudice and Pride, Decade by Decade Since Stonewall. We began the series by examining the hostile political environment that ignited the Stonewall Uprising itself in 1969. That was 50 years ago today, wasn't it? And how a decade later, a radicalized LGBTQ movement marched on Washington. That was 1979. We heard your heartbreaking and inspiring stories about surviving and losing loved ones during the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s and the big demonstration at St. Patrick's Cathedral in 1989, and how that ironically helped lead to gays and lesbians being accepted more into the mainstream in the 90s. And we talked about how same-sex marriage rights on the state level in the early aughts in places like Massachusetts and California helped to actually change public sentiment in a more favorable way toward the LGBT community nationally and pave the way for the Supreme Court's marriage decision, which brings us to today. As we were looking for archive clips to play to help set the tone for the current state of the LGBTQ community, especially in the age of Trump, our producer Lisa Allison pointed us to a Pride Week sermon given just last Sunday at Riverside Church in Manhattan by transgender activist Jennifer Finney Boylan. She spoke of her coming out as transgender to her family and then went on to enumerate the current attacks by the Trump administration on the LGBTQ community. Because it probably couldn't have been said better, here's a minute and 20 seconds of her sermon.
For the last 3 years now, Donald Trump and Mike Pence have done everything they can do to undo decades of progress. Within 2 hours of being sworn in, they removed all mention of LGBTQ people from the official White House website. The Justice Department has argued that it's legal to fire workers for being gay. You can get married on a Sunday and fired on a Monday. They supported the baker in the Masterpiece Cake case, making it legal for businesses to refuse to serve people because of who they are. They've succeeded in banning transgender people from the military, people who, unlike this president, volunteered to lay down their lives for this country. Here's a new one. Just 2 weeks ago, they argued that now we can be thrown out of homeless shelters. They're trying to change the census so that LGBTQ people are not counted, because of course, if we're not counted, we don't exist. And they've formulated plans to erase transgender people entirely as a legal class. As Randy Newman once sang, they're trying to wash us away. They're trying to wash us away. But we cannot be washed away.
Jennifer Finney Boylan, transgender activist, New York Times op-ed contributor, and author of the memoir, She's Not There, A Life in Two Genders, speaking during her Pride Week sermon at Riverside Church in Manhattan last Sunday. A central part of this series all week has been your calls as we focus on a different decade each show. And today we go to the T and the Q in LGBTQ and open up the phones for anyone who is trans or non-binary or gender fluid to call in now and tell us your stories about coming out. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And in the age of Trump and the backlash that he's helping to foment. Maybe you related to one or more of the things that Jennifer Finney Boylan just ticked off in that sermon list. Maybe you want to share how you experience prejudice, how any Trump administration policies may be affecting you personally, as well as how you show your pride. The series is, after all, Prejudice and Pride for 2019. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we also open up the phones for parents raising non-binary or trans-leaning children. Tell us what you've learned, parents. Tell us what you're still learning about. And maybe shout out some advice to other parents who may be surprised to find themselves in your position with kids with gender identities that they don't quite understand at first. Parents help other parents. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And with us now on Today and the Road Ahead is Ann Travers, sociology and anthropology professor at Simon Fraser University and author of The Trans Generation, How Trans Kids and Their Parents Are Creating a Gender Revolution. Professor Travers, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can we begin with the way that LGBTQ kids identify themselves? We list that acronym, you know, as a catch-all, but this generation is really viewing gender and sexual orientation as a spectrum, not just a series of points. So can you talk a little bit about the variety of ways that kids will identify, maybe at different ages?
Well, the thing is, most trans kids are invisible, so you don't even know they're there. So if you've been dealing with groups of children, you've been dealing with trans kids. But once trans kids or non-binary kids come out, you know, at least to some other people, one of the things that's really interesting is how active they are in shaping new language that gives, you know, new words to a range of gender identities. When I've interviewed transgender youth, they've done a wonderful job of educating me about some of the new terminology. They talk about demiromantic, demisexual, allosexual, and I've had to say, whoa, what does that mean? And they've told me that, and it's really interesting, especially because of online communities, that young trans people are playing a really significant role in shaping new language that, you know, gives people a much wider range of options to identify with in terms of sexual and gender identity.
And with respect to identity, for some folks in the older generation, and there was a conversation explicitly about this elsewhere on the station, but finding a group to identify with and making that identity clear and using that identity to fight for your rights in a group was a really important personal and political decision. And some in the younger generation seem to be moving away from these labels at all, sometimes to the chagrin of older people who might be L or G or B or T. Would you agree with that statement about, you know, moving away from labels of their gender identity at all in some cases? And why do you think that is?
Well, I think that, like, I was, you know, queer and trans in the, you know, the 70s as a young person, and we didn't have the internet. You couldn't even find out about support groups for gay people in the phone book. It was just like literally word of mouth or learning from somebody that there was a gay bookstore and then going there and trying to figure it out. But I was really alone until I got to university. I think that one of the things that happens is anytime that people organize around a label, you know, there are some people for whom the label really fits, and there are some people who, you know, go, okay, this is as close as it's going to get for me, so this is what I'm going to work with. And that certainly, you know, is a practical decision that can be important in advocating for greater inclusion, organizing as gay and lesbian people, for example. But one of the things that I've seen recently is that efforts are made to change institutional structures rather than just add a new category of people. I'm thinking in Vancouver, for example, that the, you know, the Parks Board has built new community centers that have gender-neutral change rooms. Rather than separating people into binary sex categories, changing the structure of locker rooms, and public bathrooms to afford individual privacy to anyone who needs it, and no longer doing it in terms of gender norms, that creates much more openness for people. So there are definitely LGBT people who identify in a myriad of ways, who manage to work together, but by emphasizing the way in which institutions and social practices limit to only two gender or sexual categories, and instead try to change the way that institutions function, that's a way to include more people.
Mm-hmm. Egal in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hello, Egal.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My daughter identifies as queer. Her name is Leah, and yesterday she announced her engagement to her love, Mimi, who's a terrific woman, and I'm just elated. As a parent, I'm still struggling to understand the gender identity, fluidity. I'm still not quite there. I love my daughter very much, but as a Jewish person who has seen a loss of many, many people in the Holocaust, for me, a marriage of my daughter is a continuation of the Jewish people. Maybe it will lead to offsprings. Maybe it will just continue the Jewish lifestyle that I gave my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not have been happier when I heard the news that she's engaged to a wonderful woman. I am just on cloud nine. And the fact that I have to, as a parent, understand how this all works. I raised a daughter with dresses and ribbons. It's okay. I'll work it out. But in the meanwhile, she's going and living her life, and I am just happy for her, happy for her.
It's a beautiful expression, Egal. And I wonder if you'd have any advice for parents based on your experience when some of those gender fluidity surprises first pop up for them.
The only advice I would have to parents is listen to their perspective. Listen to your child's perspective and live it as if it's your perspective. Take away the me. Take away the what I feel and what I mean. That will come and that you have time to struggle with. But it's really important to A, validate whatever they're saying, and B, try to understand from their perspective. It seems to work not only about gender, and it's a good act to do as a parent. That's what I learned.
Egal, thank you so much. Call us again. What were you thinking during that call, Anne?
Well, I was thinking about the power of his words, talking about the survival of the Jewish people post-Holocaust, and, you know, just the incredible respect I have for that perspective. But also thinking that, you know, while the majority of people killed in the Holocaust were Jewish, there were many LGBT people who were also deported to death camps and died. You know, there were many, many of those people. Hitler targeted Jewish people, but also queer and trans people for death. So, you know, there's a sense in which his daughter is such a beautiful, beautiful sign of resistance and survival for being who she is right now.
We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with the sixth and final installment of our Pride Week series, Prejudice and Pride, Decade by Decade Since Stonewall. Today we're talking about the present, 2019, both the cultural and political moment of 2019 in all these LGBTQ respects and even I and A respects. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you want to talk about being a parent of a trans or gender fluid child, or if you want to talk about your own experience as a trans or gender fluid grown up, as that is our topic today. We've been talking with different people of different ages. It's been so great this week to hear people who were around in the 60s for Stonewall, who were coming out as lesbian in the 70s, which is a lot of what we talked about for that decade, dealing with AIDS in the 80s, bis in the 90s, and now in 2019, we're leaning to make sure that we get everybody in this series toward the gender fluid and trans callers and parents of trans or gender fluid kids. Kind of a new, if not a new phenomenon for people actually talking openly about it. 212-433-9692 with Ann Travers, sociology and anthropology professor at Simon Fraser University and author of The Trans Generation, How Trans Kids and Their Parents Are Creating a Gender Revolution. You write in your book about some of the some kids who come out via self-harm or suicide attempts.
Yeah.
Why does that happen?
Well, I think it happens because they're afraid. They know that their gender identity doesn't fit with what's expected of them. And, you know, usually they try. They try to go along with it and they try to make it work. But the pain that they experience from not being seen for who they are becomes so extreme. And if they don't feel safe to tell someone, or sometimes they just feel so conflicted themselves that they just end up feeling so bad that they want to die or they want to harm themselves. And the thing is, when they're successful, we often don't know. But when they're unsuccessful, we get another chance and find out that, you know, like a number of the parents I interviewed found out that their children were trans because of an unsuccessful suicide attempt. And, you know, they were incredibly grateful to have an opportunity to help that kid feel welcome and included and valued.
Patty in Scranton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
So I just wanted to say I have four children, and I think there's a lot of gender fluidity going on in my family, but I know that at least two of them have described themselves as pansexual, which I had to research a little bit because it took me a little while to understand the difference between pan and bi. But basically, in their opinion, they'll love anybody who loves them, and as their mother, I think that's a good thing.
Thank you so much. Antonia in Emerson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Antonia.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call, and this is really a great day. We've made so much progress. We have so much more to do. In the early 90s, we were the first group, a group called Transsexuals for Change to participate in the Gay Pride Parade. And now, so many people, I'm just sitting here and I'm smiling. We still have a lot to go. My mother, in particular, was a very conservative Irish Catholic, and eventually she came around. So persistence prevails. You just have to keep working at it. The idea that one thing was mentioned by your speaker was the fact that people try to live in the gender that they're supposed to be. I tried, and I was successful in having a major career in business, but unfortunately all the achievements felt like ashes in my mouth. Right now I'm 50 years enjoying, you know, the results of this revolution.
Antonio, I'm curious if you would tell us a little of the history. You said you helped put trans into the Pride Parade. When was that, and was it first really, you know, just gay and lesbian, and was it was there resistance to getting trans in there?
It wasn't so much resistance. It was just like, really? This could date back to when RuPaul was actually a brunette. So that gives you some idea. It was about 91, 92.
Okay.
And it was just the idea that so many gay men, in particular, who were straight acting, really did not, really were not particularly thrilled about our presence. But over time, things have changed. My mother actually helped me get my surgery in terms of financing it. And I basically prevailed in getting the insurance company to pay for it. It's those types of things that have really helped our community get out of what used to be called woodworking. You know, you wanted to be so pretty that no one would ever guess that you were transsexual.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem in being openly transsexual.
Antonio, I'm going to leave it there and get some other voices on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, we're getting a fair number of questions on Twitter, Professor Travers, people asking what the word queer actually means. And I think that maybe different people use the word differently. For you, does it have a particular gender fluid or non-binary meaning?
Well, it really depends. I mean, queer emerged in the 90s as a response to, you know, the lesbian and gay movement, which was, you know, very binary oriented. And queer is a more open way of describing non-heteronormative sexuality. And some people use queer to refer to gender, but typically no, it refers to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But genderqueer has been used for people who are non-binary. It's not as commonly used anymore, but queer is a more open way of describing non-heterosexual sexuality.
More sexuality than gender, though,
yeah.
Still. Does that mean there needs to be a new initial?
I don't think so. But like I said, the kind of language to describe gender and sexual diversity is really exploding and developing, like the term pansexual that one of your callers referenced, that describes people of many, like people who are potentially attracted to people of any gender, you know, not just binary male or female.
Lisa in Far Rockaway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. First, I want to identify myself as an Orthodox Jewish woman who is the mother of a child. I gave birth to a boy that I named Ian. Mm-hmm. Ian became Danielle.
Oh, cool.
And Danielle gave me permission to still use male terminology because it's so, like, I go back and forth between male and female
yeah.
pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to tell you that my son came out to me when he had been hospitalized for a suicide attempt.
Oh, no.
He called me from the hospital, and he told me, "Mom, I'm trans." And I told him that no matter what road he had to walk in this life, I gave birth to him for him to have a life.
Yeah,
and
really.
He needed to be who he is. Due to his mental illness that accompanied his sexual dysphoria, transgender dysphoria, he immediately told the nurses that I had reacted very badly and cut him out of my life. He then later cut me out of his life. But when we were talking, he was very open with me and very gifted at putting his feelings into words. I asked him, "Is this a choice that you're making?" Because there's a lot of that in the rhetoric of straight people.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
he looked at me and he said, "Mom, if I had a choice, don't you think I would choose to be normal?"
Yeah.
I want to tell parents out there, loving your child and supporting your child, even if it's difficult, even if it's against what your community says, is so much easier than mourning your child. My
yeah.
Beautiful boy, as I call him, took his own life.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, Lisa, this took such courage for you to call in. I'm so sorry.
Is there any questions? I speak very openly about my beloved child, difficult to do within my community.
How can your experience help others?
I want to tell them that our children are going through things that maybe they don't even understand. Understanding
yeah.
what your child is going through is so much less important than loving your child and accepting your child. I taught Ian how to put on eye makeup. I taught him how to do all sorts of beauty things that boys aren't taught. He was an incredible person. He was teased because he tended to wear headbands to school, was very gender-neutral clothing when he was in high school, and one of the boys said, "Why do you wear that?" And he handed it to him and said, you should put it on, maybe you would like it. And the boy kind of rejected that idea, but Ian walked him over to the mirror, put it on his head, and said, just wear it for a little while. And they ended up becoming good friends. So instead of being victimized by someone, he showed that child, this is what feels good to me. Does mm-hmm. it feel good to you? He was just an incredible person, and I encourage all parents to see the incredible people they gave birth to, no matter how they identify their gender, no matter whom they love, let them be who they are and just love them for who they are.
And any last thing you want to say to Lisa?
I'm so sorry, and I appreciate your courage in, you know, using the pain that you've gone through to try to help other parents and other kids, because your story is not unique, unfortunately, that, you know, there are other parents like you who are grieving this unimaginable loss. And to share the message that, you know, keeping your kid alive is the most important thing, and loving them and accepting them is such a powerful message for you to share coming from such pain.
Really. Lisa, thank you for your openness and your courage again. And you've done a great service for people today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Jason in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jason.
Hi. So I really only had the realization that I'm gender fluid about 6 or 7 months ago. It just sort of, I had been in a relationship and it was sort of constricting in a sense. And once I was single again and I was just more open and free from judgment, I was talking with one of my friends about how I was feeling. I didn't even know at the time that gender fluid was a thing, but she said, no, that's a thing. There are people like you. And it was liberating, and not just because I got to accept a part of myself more, but also because I didn't realize just how much the whole toxic masculinity thing had impacted me. The music that I listened to, I couldn't listen to something that was deemed too effeminate. Like, I was in seventh grade, I was the kid who got made fun of because I didn't like when people said, that's so gay. And so I just, it's been a really great new chapter for me.
Thank you so much, Jason. One more. Kate in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks, Brian. It's great to be on. My third child is trans, non-binary trans, and uses they pronouns. And when they were born, it was so clear within the first year that this person was in the wrong body. She was born female. They were born female. But I've been so moved by this conversation. And this woman who just spoke about her son, and all you have to do is love them. And that is such a powerful message. I'm grateful that there's a non-binary movement now, because this is where they belong, they being my child, and where they're most comfortable. But the fact is, they're taking tea now and facing a double mastectomy to reach some level of serenity that I can't even conceive of not having. Mm. And so as supportive as I am, I feel very sad that my child is having to go through this to reach that serenity. And I wish there was better science to understand what makes children gender fluid, if you will, mm-hmm. or born in the wrong body.
And so, Professor Travers, as a last word, what about the social science, since you're a social scientist?
Well, I think that the best thing that we can do for kids is avoid organizing them into boy and girl categories and just provide so much more openness so that, you know, gender is a spectrum and they can, you know, identify anywhere along that they like or not at all. And I do believe that there will always be people whose bodies aren't right for them, and that needs to change. But I think that what's really harmful is when we impose boy and girl identities on children, on all children, because if we stop doing that, everyone would have so much more room, and trans kids would avoid the extreme sense of crisis that they go through.
Let me ask you one quick political question, actually, before you go, because you know, in the context of this whole history series on pride and prejudice that's been political as well as personal, Trump started his campaign by saying anyone can use any bathroom at Trump Tower. Remember that?
Yeah.
But as president, he's become so reactionary on LGBTQ issues. How much do you see Trump's personal appealing to his base, because that's what I think it is, as having a broader community impact? Because that's going on, that retrenchment is going on at the very same time as we're hearing from our callers, the flourishing of openness about your identity in ways that were, you know, very unusual even just a few years ago, is also taking place.
Well, I mean, Trump is a person who has no sexual morality, period, and he's also, you know, a rapist and, you know, a sexually violent person. But he had, you know, he picked Pence as a running mate, so he's trying to appeal to fundamentalist Christians who have very restrictive notions about what is appropriate. And, you know, attacking LGBT people is a way of appealing to that base. You know, it's sort of a trade-off, you know, for someone who, you know, personally has no sexual morality at all, like according to any standard, because he's a sexually violent person. But, you know, he's sort of pacifying, drawing on the Christian right by attacking LGBT people. And, you know, it seems to be really working, which is really unfortunate. But he doesn't have any, you know, personal, I think, vendetta against LGBT people, but he wants power. He'll hurt anybody to get it.
Ann Traver, sociology and anthropology professor at Simon Fraser University and author of The Trans Generation, How Trans Kids and Their Parents Are Creating a Gender Revolution. We should say, because she called Trump alleged rapist, but we will have the alleger, the most recent alleger on Monday's show, E. Jean Carroll, who has that new book out that includes her various experiences of what she calls her most hideous men, and includes her accusation against President Trump. So E. Jean Carroll, listeners, just letting you know, is going to be a guest on Monday's show. But Professor Travers, thank you so much for joining us today.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
And so ends our six-part series, Prejudice and Pride, decade by decade since Stonewall. A big shout-out to our producer, Amina Cerna, who did almost all the work on this. So listeners, if you're parading or protesting or whatever this weekend, happy Pride weekend, and I hope you enjoyed this series. Don't worry about I'm living. It's none of your business. I'm where I stay. Going out with music by Shay Diamond, and we're going to talk about a whole other meaning of the words Shay and Diamond put together after this.